I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey moms, dads, teachers, and coaches, visit PNCAchieversBaltimore.com and nominate a local high school lacrosse player who demonstrates excellent leadership qualities in the classroom, community, and on the field. Every Tuesday from March 3rd to May 19th, we will be highlighting a PNC Achiever on air and online.
This is WJZ-FM, Catonsville, Baltimore's sports talk at 105.7 The Fan, and always live on the free Odyssey app. From the OuchGuy.com sports desk, here's Nolan McGraw.
The Orioles played their first three spring training games over the weekend, but the injury news that Mike Elias dropped right before the action started is still stuck in the minds of fans. Jordan Westberg will miss at least the first month of the season after receiving a PRP injection for a partially torn UCL. While this same injury is usually a kiss of death for pitchers, there is some hope that Westberg can avoid the worst as a position player. Here's Mike Elias on the reason they chose PRP over surgery at this point.
You know, there's a trade-off there, but if the surgery might not be necessary, and it's a possibility that it's never necessary, I think you do what you can to avoid it, particularly with a position player. You know, we've had a lot of top people look at it, and they think this is something that we should approach non-operatively.
And the United States men's hockey team will bring home the gold after taking down Canada 2-1 in overtime yesterday. New Jersey center Jack Hughes tallied the game winner a little under 2 minutes into the extra period, but goalie Connor Hellebuck was the real hero in this one, recording 41 saves, including a miracle stop early in the third to keep things tied. The victory marks the first gold medal for U.S. men's hockey since the legendary 1980 team. This Fan Flash is sponsored by Plaza Ford. Plaza Ford offers transparent pricing on their extensive inventory of new, used, or certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs with no hidden fees. Visit them online at plazaford.com. From the Bob Bell Kia Nissan of Essex Weather Center, mostly cloudy and windy, temps in the upper 30s. I'm Nolan McGraw, Ravens, Terps, and your home for the most Orioles spring training coverage, 105.7 The Fan.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman, Tim Barbalace, and Beltway Ben Hall.
Yeah, it's you know, certainly something that you keep an eye on throughout the winter, and at times it can influence some of the decision making, as I think every team's looking at their projected standings. You know, this is once again a historically strong division, and the AL East, people make big moves, and there are big swings and impact players being added to the division every winter, and it's just life in this division. So I think we made several ourselves. I think we're right in the thick of things. I think this division up and down is going to be really tough, as it always is, but we enjoy it.
So that was Mike Elias talking about the AL East and their expectations. And if you care about these things, the Orioles are playing the Atlanta Braves. Spring training baseball trail 2-0 in the fourth inning. Keegan Aiken gave up a couple runs. Kay Povich, 2 shutout innings. Alas, expectations. And what do we expect from this Orioles team? And how much pressure are they under? And what is accept, or what would we constitute a successful season?
Well, Jason Stark, who covers MLB for The Athletic, he did everybody's favorite, the unnamed executives
like
and
one.
Former execs and all of these. So it was 36 guys, and the Orioles came in fourth under the teams, front offices, managers under the most pressure. And make no mistake about it, the O's absolutely have a lot of pressure on them coming off an extremely disappointing year. And you can go back to 2022, where they had all these come-from-behind wins. They were ahead of schedule, didn't make the playoffs, but finished with a winning record. And that was when Mike Elias gave the liftoff quote. And 2023, it was the magic carpet ride. You're vastly exceeding expectations, winning 101 games, but you flame out in the ALDS against the Rangers. Then you come back. You start off 2024, awesome, and then the second half was a nightmare. So each of the past 3 years, we've seen the Orioles' win total decline.
Yeah.
And that necessitated Mike Elias to operate much differently than he had been. And he did. The Orioles spent a ton of money this offseason, $213.5 million. Only the Phillies, Blue Jays, Mets, and Dodgers spent more. You gave out the big deal to Pete Alonso. This rotation is much, much better. And this is also an interesting point in where this roster is, where Adley Rutschman, he only has one more year arbitration eligibility after this season. Gunnar Henderson, only two more years. So this, to me, Ken, is going to be such a telling season, not just for Mike Elias, but for this whole young core, because things are going to look a heck of a lot different next year when the lockout happens, and that's going to be a janky season. And then you have some of these guys that are going to be up for free agency soon after that. So their win total, 84.5 wins. My expectation is this. If they don't make the playoffs, and if they don't win the wild card round, that's a big disappointment for me.
Yeah, I think bare minimum is postseason. And then beyond that, remember, as you just alluded to, they have not yet, not even a series, they haven't won a playoff game. They've hardly had leads in the playoffs with this group. And they're going to show us this season whether last year was a bump in the road or a trend. And does it start going again that way early? I don't think it will. But sure, it could happen, and obviously the injury concerns early this season. We'll see. Sorry, the got a little frog in my throat.
And choked up talking about the birds.
Yeah, the Orioles are very special to me.
They are.
So they get me a little bit in my feels. But do they prove that last year was the outlier, or is that who they are?
Well, I think that's a great point, because when we were having on various guys and we were asking them that, like, is this just who these players are? Like a Colton Cowser, where last year was a nightmare for him, and obviously injuries played a big role. Adley Rutschman, it's been a year and a half where he just hasn't been the same guy. Like, is that who those guys are? Or are they going to buck the trend this year? And that's going to go an extremely long way in determining where this team finishes.
Yeah, I think, you know what, it's funny, and I'm just going to talk out loud here. We do bounce back, fall back, and I don't mean to do it in the way we usually do it, but at some point, I think in the next couple of weeks, we should talk about these guys. Like Adley Rutschman, does he bounce back, or is this who he is? Jordan Westberg, is it bounce back? Jackson Holland, like, because that is going to be a lot or a big part of whether this story goes to the postseason or it ends premature. Maybe it's not premature. Maybe it's who they are. But I think this young core, who is not as young as they used to be, if they don't show again what we thought they were, then maybe they don't get to where we thought they'd be in the first place.
Well, and does that cause for even more drastic measures from Mike Elias and maybe somewhat blowing up this core that we thought that they had? And you saw a tiny bit with that this offseason, trading away Grayson Rodriguez. Like, that was different for Mike.
Yes.
He hasn't traded a guy that had that level of, you know, where he was as a prospect, where Grayson Rodriguez was at one point the highest rated starting pitching prospect in all of baseball, and you traded that guy, and that could burn them. But do you see more of those moves if these guys prove to not be who we thought they were?
Yeah, I thought he did three things this offseason that he hasn't done before. One was the Grayson Rodriguez trade, where they traded a guy that they usually hang on to these guys, and that signaled to me that they think his arm is shot, and he could prove them wrong.
Sure.
And they have not had a good read on injuries sometimes. Number two was the Shane Boz trade, because I think they traded guys they actually coveted in that deal, and he's not want to do that. Even the Corbin Burnes trade, he could talk himself into the fact there was no way for Jerry Ortiz to play, and DL Hall was a relief pitcher. So that those guys didn't hurt him to trade. I think the Shane Boz trade stung. And then Pete Alonso giving him 5 years, $150 million plus. He had not done that before. So was a lot of what he did similar-ish? Maybe. But he did three things that I don't think we've seen him do before.
No, and really, I'll even add to it, he operated with a heck of a lot more urgency. It's not like he was waiting until February, like in the past, or late January. Like, those moves that they were making were December. And yeah, it was one thing after another, where the Birds, come the winter meetings, they were the most active team in free agency at that point.
Now, he didn't close on Ranger Suarez. No. He didn't close on Framber Valdez. And then he pivoted to Chris Bassitt, who is consistent, but he isn't the upside that those guys are.
No, that was the one area that was disappointing for the offseason, because when he was bringing up frontline starter, bringing up ownership willing to spend into the red considerably, like, that's, and Framber going for just a three-year contract. Like, I get it. I was bummed. We all were bummed the fact that they didn't get that frontline guy, but all in all, this was a pretty good offseason by Mike Elias, but now we got to see it play out.
So we have a big Monday show guest-wise on the program, our friend Jonas Schaefer. It's combine season. He covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner. We'll get his thoughts on could they franchise tag Tyler Linderbaum? What's on Eric DaCosta's list as the offseason is starting to come into focus? Scott Braun, foul territory. Get his thoughts on the Chris Bassitt signing, on the Jordan Westbrook injury, much more in Major League Baseball at 5, and our own Cordell Woodland talking O's and Ravens at 5:30.
We're also going to debut around the Beltway today. We're fired up for that.
Rest in peace, TMI.
We'll talk the Terps getting the big win over Washington, and also USA hockey.
That was awesome. I hope I did you guys. Let me derail for a second. Did you guys watch that yesterday? Did you guys watch?
I watched the third period and then overtime.
It was awesome. Like, I watched, it was start 8:15, and I'm up early with the dogs anyway. So and actually Margie, because it's the Olympics, she gets into the
Margie
Olympics.
Getting in,
So we watched the whole game, and it was pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, dude, it was intense, hard hitting, and crazy.
Hey, they got outplayed, but they won. That's all that matters. Coming up next, though, we recap the Orioles weekend. Heston Kerstad bomb. Pete Alonso, another bomb. Jordan Westbrook speaks. Trey Gibson, is he a thing? It's a recap of spring training weekend next here on The Fan.
Baseball is back. Follow 105.7 The Fan for season-long coverage. Big hits, walk-off wins.
Hey, goodbye to this ball.
Where rookies make their mark and legends add to the story.
This is the greatest place to play.
We'll cover the swings, misses, and everything in between. Big Bad Morning Show, Vinny and Haney. Inside Access, live on the Fans YouTube channel weekdays 6 till 6. Sports Radio 105.7, The Fan. Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7, The Fan.
Trey's really good, you know, and that's what I love about spring training games. You get to see our young guys come up and play, whether it be pitchers or position players. He was one of them, and that's a credit to Frenchie. I mean, it's tough where you have one of your, you know, young prospect pitchers in camp that's going to be a starter, and you want to make sure he's getting built up appropriately too. So having him throw three innings was part of it, but it's more of like to get him built up and ready for the season.
That was Craig Albernaz on Friday. Trey Gibson finished the Orioles 2-0 win over the Yankees. Three innings, two hits, three strikeouts. Quite frankly, very impressive. I was seeing our friend Andy Koska on Twitter earlier. Thinks we might see him in Baltimore come August.
Certainly a possibility. And we know that the Orioles tend to be pretty deliberate when it comes to promotions throughout the minor league system. But you can look at Trey, and last year especially, I know he spent a little bit of time in Aberdeen in 2024, but 9 games in Aberdeen, then 10 games at Chesapeake, and then boom, he was at Norfolk. Like, he was a fast riser, and he obviously played college ball, an undrafted guy, but given his trajectory, I don't expect him to break camp and head north with the club, but I definitely think it's realistic that we're going to see him at some point this year.
Well, the reality is we keep talking about who's going to be in the bullpen, and while Trey Gibson is going to be a starter in the minors, that's probably where he's best suited if he did get to this level.
Oh, for sure. Especially this year and given the starting rotation that the Birds currently have, because we've been talking in recent weeks, it's looking likely that there's going to be a six-man rotation. And yes, we know that injuries are going to happen, but you have some depth on your starting rotation right now.
So Saturday, Tyler Wells gave them a scoreless inning. Yunier Kano, we'll get to him later, gave him a scoreless inning. Chase McDermott, a scoreless inning. Dietrich Enns got rocked, gave up six earned in a third of an inning. So starting to see some of the bullpen, and I know it's early, but the guys that we think we know are going to be in the pen?
Yeah, look, those are the jobs that are available to be won for this team out of the bullpen. And it's hard to take so much stock in spring training performances, but Dietrich Enns, you obviously would like to see him perform. But
sure.
It's one outing, and they gave him a fully guaranteed contract this year, $2.6 million. But yeah, it's good to see Wells, and Albert Az was really raving about Wells and him talking because he's a new father. I think he's got a 10-month-old or around that. He was doing the interview with her, which is pretty cool.
Let's get to the bats. Heston Kjerstad hit a bomb yesterday. I don't know if there's a place at the end for him, but nice to see him looking like himself.
It sounds like he's been raking. Like,
the ball's coming off
there.
His bad heart.
Yes, and live BP, he's hit two home runs. He hit that home run in the exhibition game. Look, it's good to see. I think we touched on him a bit last week where I'm not really expecting anything out of him on this club. But look, you'd like to see the guy, number one, stay healthy, because it's just been one thing after another for Heston Kjerstad. But if he keeps mashing and he starts the year in Norfolk and trying to, you know, beat the door down, get back up here, look, that's a good problem to have. It's just, I don't know how he fits right now.
Pete Alonso has played in two spring training games. He has two home runs.
Let's keep it up.
And he's chirping.
Yeah. But that's the biggest thing, man. Like, I think the impact that Pete has made with this clubhouse, not even a couple of weeks into spring training, it's been massive.
Do you think he shoved Colton Cowser in a locker yet?
I don't know. Possibly. We'll see. I mean, look, there's going to be moments throughout this year where I'm sure Pete is going to voice some displeasures with the club. And it needs to happen.
Yes.
Because they haven't.
Need to be an adult in the room.
Yes. He needs to be the adult in the room, and he's accepted that. He knows he got paid. He knows that his resume is better than anyone on this club, and he is taking that responsibility seriously.
Nobody in that clubhouse has won a playoff game except him, well, Helsley, but I'm talking about the core.
Yeah.
He's hit home runs to win playoff games.
But it's just, he's been through the wars, Ken. Like,
yes.
He knows what it's like going through those losing streaks and trying to get back on track and keep being measured throughout a 162-game schedule. Like, he knows that. And this clubhouse has missed that.
Jordan Westberg spoke, and he was about as frustrated as I can imagine that I could have ever imagined he would be talking about what he's going through.
Yeah, I think the frustration for Westberg, it's really getting to him at this point.
Said he's been dealing with the elbow for a while.
Yeah, it's been a chronic issue for him. And Westberg, the thing that's wild with him is he really didn't deal with injuries throughout his time in the minors. And now it's just hitting him all at once. And you could just hear the frustration coming out of his mouth where we know how important he is to that club, and we know that when he's sidelined, it really just crushes him on the inside. So I think it's wearing on him. I think the injuries are really wearing on him. And even coming in to spring training with the oblique, and now you have the elbow, like, geez.
Yeah, I feel terribly for Jordan Westberg. As you mentioned, Bone, he never got hurt in college. Like this, they never got really hurt in the minor leagues. It's only been once he got here, and now he's hurt all the time.
Yeah, and the injury bug just continues to bite him repeatedly, and you hope that he can work his way through this and be back with the club some point in May, June.
We'll switch to Ravens coming up next as the NFL world has descended upon Indianapolis. For the Combine, Eric DaCosta spoke to the Inner Circle podcast. What did he have to say about Tyler Linderbaum, about the offseason? More and more EDC. We hear from him next here on The Fan.
If you missed today's Vinny and Haney show, have segments, hours, or full show delivered daily to your phone. Subscribe to the podcast and listen anytime on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts. Vinny and Haney, live on the Fan's YouTube channel, tomorrow 10 till 2, 105.7 The Fan.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Big Bad Morning Show. Vinny and Haney. Inside Access. Live on YouTube weekdays 6 till 6. Search Baltimore 105.7 The Fan. Subscribe for daily shorts right to your phone and never miss what you missed. The Fan. From the OuchGuy.com sports desk, here's Nolan McGraw.
Finalizing a bullpen will be maybe the biggest task for Craig Albernaz and company this spring. Beyond Ryan Helsley slotting in as the new closer, there isn't much in terms of defined roles for this group right now. Could matchups dictate who gets one of the last reliever spots on the roster? Maybe Mike Elias and his manager would prefer an additional lefty over a righty. Well, for now, Albernaz is keeping it purely performance-based.
Having multiple lefties is very intriguing, but with everyone in our camp, that's where our pitching coaches are solving is to make our guys matchup-proof. You know, so righties can get out lefties and lefties can get out righties. All of our pitchers are great. They pound the strike zone, you know, with 13 Ks, two walks. That's what we want. Hopefully we can keep that going all through camp.
Meanwhile, in the NFL, competition committee chairman Rick McKay says the league is not anticipating any discussion about the tush push this offseason after the debate got pretty contentious in 2025. While more teams started to utilize the play this past season, the success rate across the league did drop from 82% to 76%. This Fan Flash is sponsored by McDonald's. When the Caps score in the last minute of any regulation period, you get a free six-piece McNuggets with a minimum dollar purchase on the McDonald's app the next day, only at participating McDonald's. From the Bob Bell Kia Nissan of Essex Weather Center, mostly cloudy and windy, temps in the upper 30s. I'm Nolan McGraw, Ravens Terps, and your home for the most Orioles spring training coverage, 105.7 The Fan.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
I think our coaching staff, what I've seen from our coaches, our new coaching staff is very, very exciting. I think sometimes change can be good. With change comes innovation and new ways of doing things, new ways of practicing, you know, a new scheme and all these different things. That's going to give us an advantage, I think, this year. When you do the same thing every year and you're playing the Bengals twice a year, the Steelers twice a year, and, you know, the Browns, these guys know us like the back of their hands. I think sometimes the change is a positive thing.
Eric DaCosta on the Inner Circle podcast. That must be Mr. Circle who was interrupting during the answer there, talking about the new coaching staff. Felt like change is needed sometimes.
It had gotten to a point where it was over with John Harbaugh. Yes. And there were multiple moments throughout that season, the Texans game being the first one for me, where they just got throttled. And I know that they were missing a lot of their starters.
Had a lot of rookies on the field.
I get that. But John Harbaugh coached teams, that does not happen. It especially doesn't happen at home.
It doesn't happen against Houston.
You finished with a 3-6 home record and all of those primetime home losses that you had. At some point, it becomes the definition of insanity. You can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Just think about this, how much of a home field advantage they used to have. And just off the top of my head, Houston, Detroit, and the fourth quarter against New England, they got punched in the mouth at home.
Well, the Detroit game. Detroit ran for over 200 yards.
Yes.
That doesn't happen against the Ravens.
No, they not, and it definitely doesn't happen at home.
No.
So, like, it was, I think it was time. I agree with EDC. It was time for change. More from Eric DaCosta speaking on the Inner Circle podcast, talks about the Ravens' defense heading into next season.
You know, I think we've got to do a better job of getting after the quarterback for sure. I think we have some young guys who can do that. I think losing Nnamdi Matabike was a big blow for us this year. Terrible that we lost him early in the season like we did. But I think we've got some other guys on defense we're excited about. Travis Jones. We got some young outside linebackers that we feel strongly about. Of course, we got Roquan. And then our secondary has a lot of good players. Kyle Hamilton, Nate Wiggins. Of course, Marlon Humphrey is a great player for us, too. I think there's a strong nucleus coming back. I'm really, really excited to see Jesse Minter's influence on our defense. That's his specialty as a defensive coach. I think that'll make a big, big impact.
He kind of pivoted during that answer, talking about pass rush, and then he went to Roquan, and then the secondary.
Talking about Marlon.
And Marlon's a great player.
Interesting.
He was not a great player last season. He was a great player the year before. He wasn't a Pro Bowler. He was an All-Pro the year before. He was bad last year, and if they have any hopes of accomplishing what they want to accomplish, they need to get guys that get after the quarterback because they couldn't a year ago. And it's not just Matabike coming back.
No, it's not. And look, we don't even know if Nnamdi Matabike is coming back. We still haven't gotten any clarity on his situation. And hopefully we find out soon, especially before free agency, because that drastically alters how you would operate. But yeah, they need multiple guys on the edge. And they also need their recent draft picks to be a lot better.
Yeah.
And that's part of this coaching staff, where Jesse Minter, he inherited a terrible Chargers defense when he first went there in 2024 and turned it around instantly. Now, do I think this Ravens defense is as bad as that? But you got to get Malachi Starks playing to another level in year two, and we're going to get into him more. But Nate Wiggins, I don't know what the heck happened with him down the stretch. Him and Marlon, they gave up some of the most receiving yards that any corner in football gave up. That they have to play better. Mike Green is going to have to take a step in year two. And you got to get Roquan Smith back on track.
Yeah, Roquan Smith was not a good football player. Roquan and Marlon were not good football players a year ago, period, end of story.
No, and that just really harms your football team when two of the guys that take up the most cap on your team aren't playing up to those numbers, not even coming close to it.
Okay, what about the offensive side of the football heading into next year?
And then offensively, I think all the pieces are there. You know, we've got some skill guys. We've got a tight end like Mark Andrews, running backs, Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers. They're really, really good about Zay. Rashad Bateman. A lot of good players, I think, on the offensive line. We've got two good tackles in Roger Rosengarten and Ronnie Stanley. We got some work to do on Tyler Linderbaum's contract. He's a free agent. We strongly hope to have him back. He's a great player for us and a great leader. And then we've got to just, I think, augment the guard position, which is something that we can do. We've got some good young guys that we really believe in this year. They're going to make a big, big jump this year for us. Emory Jones is a guy we drafted last year in the third round. We feel really strongly about as being a guy that's going to come in and win a spot for us at the guard spot. But
they strongly hope to have Tyler Linderbaum back. That's interesting hearing that.
And acknowledging that they have some work to be done.
But I thought Linderbaum might be out the door. Eric, usually if you go back in the offseason, like, I think he spoke in similar way, and he'll speak at the Combine, I think.
Yeah.
But I seem to remember at the Combine a year ago, he was confident about Ronnie, and we kind of laughed at it at the time, and then Ronnie stayed. And here he is, and I know it's just a podcast, and he mentioned Bateman in there, but he strongly hoped that Tyler Linderbaum will be back.
Well, that's a big loss if they lose him, and because then you have to fill another position along your offensive line. Your entire interior, you're basically revamping. And he mentioned Emory Jones.
Yeah.
And he figured he's... But he wasn't a starter for them at the beginning of the year. I'm saying week one starters, like, they very well could have three brand new starters week one next year on the interior. That's a lot to go through. That's a lot to change. And do you want a chance having a rookie center? I feel like there you probably want more of a veteran. But I think another position that they've sort of taken for granted in recent years is the guard position, where we've seen, you know, Ben Powers, he signed elsewhere. Yeah. Simpson signed elsewhere after performing above expectations. Like, they got to figure out the interior.
Let's hear one more from Eric, who spoke to the Inner Circle podcast, and he talks about how he handles the offseason.
Yeah, so I try to be as organized as possible every day. You know, I have a list of things I want to get to. For me, a big part of that is getting in early so that I can watch tape, because once 9 o'clock rolls around in the morning, I'm getting picked at all day long by people.
What's early? What time do you get in? What's early?
Well, on the weekends, I have an unusual way on the weekends. So I go to bed early on Friday night, and I try to get into the office at 3 a.m. And I like to work on Saturday mornings. There's nobody here. So I can work from about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning till about 10 a.m. and then go home, and my kids are just waking up. And so for me, I can steal like 6 hours of tape watching on Saturday mornings. And if I'm up for it, I'll do the same thing on Sunday morning. So I can steal like 12 hours over the course of a weekend when I'm not being bothered, when it's just me here in the office just watching tape. A lot of getting ready for the draft is literally just watching the players and ranking players. And the only way to do it is just by watching the players. You can't cheat the system. You got to go through it and you got to grind on these guys. So that's a big part of what I do. And then you've got to enable your staff. And I have a great scouting staff. A lot of us have been together for 15 or 20 years. And I've got to trust those guys that they're going to be the best at what they do. I don't get as involved with free agency, so I'm not going to spend as much time. We don't spend a lot of money in free agency, as Todd knows. That's why he's always hated the Baltimore Ravens. We're a draft and develop team. So a lot of our resources are going to be acquiring as many draft picks as possible. And then using those on players, trying to hit on as many picks as we can, trying to hit on 60% of our draft picks every single year, and trying to retain as many of those guys as we can for a second contract.
Interesting. Number one, he says we don't play the free agent game often. And also, he started as a scout. He still likes to think of himself as a scout, so he gets to the building early and peruses through tape.
No, that's his background. He, like you said, he grew up in this organization, area scout, director of college scouting, director of player personnel, assistant GM, and now GM. But it is really crazy, you know, hearing the work ethic and the stuff that the coaching staff does and the scout. Like, you think of Eric DaCosta at this point. You had to assemble, you had to hire the head coach, help him with the entire coaching staff. You're negotiating with Lamar Jackson. You're negotiating with Tyler Linderbaum. You're getting ready for the scouting combine that's happening this. Like, there's so much up in the air right now for him.
Coming up next, the debut of a new segment. We go around the Beltway. Beltway Ben, where are we heading next?
Yeah, we're going to break down what I saw and my experience in D.C. on Saturday for the Duke-Michigan game. Great matchup game between two of the top three teams. Very, very fun one.
That's next here on The Fan.
Next time on the Big Bad Morning Show.
How great was college basketball Monday night? Also, the O's take the diamond on Monday for exhibition baseball. And reports are that Lamar Jackson has been engaged in off-season activities with the team. But is he ready to sign the extension?
Tomorrow on Sports Radio 105.7, The Fan.
This is an Odyssey Sports Minute.
The NFL Competition Committee said on Sunday that they are not anticipating an attempt to ban the tush push this year. The NFL saw teams try the tush push 112 times last season compared to 101 in 2024. I've always thought that you can't create a rule to stop something that one team is just successful at. Don't punish those who are good at the tush push. Find a way to stop it. I'm Chris Flood.
Hey y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
Let's go around the Beltway with Ben Hall.
95.7 The Fan.
And let's bring in Beltway Ben Hall. And Ben was covering the Duke-Michigan game Saturday in D.C., a game that Duke ended up winning 68-63. So, Ben, what did you think?
A little surprised, I'll be honest. Thought Michigan would win that game. Things went in Duke's favor, and Duke dealt with some foul trouble as well, but Ademar picking up a third foul where he did, the 7-3 guy from Michigan, if anybody was watching it, he missed more than half of the game because he had to sit on the bench in foul trouble. He wasn't able to start the second half, but it was a great game. We saw Michigan, they were up early, they go down for a while, and they cut the lead to one with like 2:30 left. I'm like, all right, Michigan's going to somehow pull this one away.
And then Cameron Boozer took over.
Yeah, and Shire, I got to give Shire credit. The timeout, they come out of a timeout, they set a back screen for Isaiah Evans, who's a three-point shooter, and he's finished above the rim a little bit more this year. Set a back screen for him. Ngongba, who's a great passing big, throws a perfect alley-oop, and that was, it was a really good play for Shire out of halftime, or out of a timeout. So it was a great game. I was surprised that Duke was able to pull it out. But Michigan, after I was kind of kicking myself, because it did feel like Michigan was due for a loss. College basketball, it's rare to see the team, the Kentucky teams, like in 20, whatever that was, where they go undefeated all year. And a lot of these teams are due for losses, and especially when you meet up with a Duke team who is one of the more elite, you know, top five teams in the country that took them down.
What do you think, and it seems like they've been doing this a little bit more in recent years, but having that marquee matchup in February, the non-conference, like, I think it's awesome.
I love it. I a lot of credit, and I credit Shire for it because last year Shire agreed with Underwood. This year it was with Dusty. Like, it was a legit NCAA tournament atmosphere.
Yeah.
I've been to NCAA tournament games. I went to the Final Four years ago, and things have changed since then. But post game, sitting in that press room, both coaches were adamant. Like, this was March basketball. And then they're like saying, well, kind of comparing it to a round of 64. And then finally Dusty's like, well, actually, that was more like Elite Eight or Final Four. But it was funny. Like, the way the crowd was, way more Duke to Michigan, which I expected. Yeah. Even though Michigan always travels well, every time there was a Let's Go Blue chant, it was immediately like, stop with Duke. Let's go. And then all the Duke fans were loud. I mean, you know, the Duke bandwagon travels across the country. They're all out. But it was a legit NCAA. I mean, it was the most attended non-conference neutral site game, or neutral site. It was the most attended neutral site game this year in college basketball and ever at that arena, which was pretty impressive.
How much did you notice the difference in the arena? Because I guess they put a bunch of money into it to update it. Did you notice anything?
I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah.
So
you didn't notice?
No, I mean, I did get a nice, I had to walk around to find my credentials. See, it was way up. We had to walk up, get the elevator, do all that. The arena was nice. And I'll be honest, my seats, I was in the hockey press box. So I was up top.
Yeah, been there.
But the view, like,
it's good.
It was a great view. I mean, it was an awesome view, and you're also like right near the fans. That was cool. I enjoyed that. Like, these Duke fans were really, really into it. But that was a good, very good game.
I guess I'll be Jerry here. What was the press spread? Were you guys fed?
I'm glad.
What?
You asked. We were not. There was like a set of waters. I do need to talk to Jerry. When we get Jerry on next, I'm going to let him know, because I'm sure, I don't know if they count him, but that Baltimore Media Free Food account will probably attack that.
It's a shame that that person wasn't covering the game, because they would absolutely blast at the arena.
I mean, it's a top three matchup in the country, and they had a couple of sodas, and I don't drink soda, so I just grabbed a water.
Yeah.
No food.
No milk.
No milk. Once there's no food, there's never milk.
Yeah.
They were not super kind. They were kind, I will say that. But no food. I did. And like, ever since Jerry being how Jerry is, that's all I'm thinking about. Like, Jerry would be furious right now.
Yeah. Baltimore Free. What is Baltimore Media?
Baltimore Media Free Food?
We don't know if it's Jerry.
No, we do
have
not.
No idea. Yeah, we're still trying
somebody
to get
in his orbit. It was an interesting Saturday because we had the top four teams playing each other. And both games went the opposite, I think, as that we expected.
Yes.
Yeah, because Duke beat Michigan, and Arizona went to Houston and beat Houston.
And that doesn't happen to Samson's teams, especially at this point in the year. And now they lost two straight. And tonight, you go to Allen, which is one of the hardest places to play in the country. And, I mean, they're a slight favorite, but, like, Kelvin Samson hasn't lost three games in a row, and I forget how long. It's been a while. And this is a legit top four team in the country. But they're in a tough spot. Darren Peterson.
What's going on with him?
It looks like he's going to play a full game again. He might shout to the bullpen after a three. Like, I mean, that's still a bizarre situation. But, no, I don't really know what to expect from Houston here. I do know that Michigan, Duke, Arizona, Houston, it's rare that we get the chalky Final Four. The past few years, we're starting to see it. It feels like it's happening again. Last year, we saw it. I don't know that we're seeing the San Diego State 8 seed or the FAU where they were.
That's where I was going to go, because that was a big topic of conversation last year during the turn. Like, has NIL kind of killed the Cinderella? Has NIL kind of...
I think so.
To an extent, absolutely for multiple years. If one, there will still be a team who's able to do it, but that next year they don't have any of those guys. That's what was so crucial for the mid-majors, the smaller majors of college basketball, to be able to have a guy for 4 years, and it was normal. Now, if you do anything successful at the below the Power Four level, even at the Power Four level, you probably have a different team at that level, or if you're a lower level, you're being shopped around, and now you have agents who are shopping you around throughout the year, even though it's not legal, we know what's going on. It definitely has had its impact, and I think it's just me being a diehard college basketball fan that I don't want it to be the truth. But, I mean, it's going to be another year of a chalk Final Four, I'm expecting, and then we'll have to see how it goes next year. But it does feel like the top teams, they're able to put the money in. Now, Sampson has complained about the money at Houston, and he didn't really, abuse the transfer portal. He didn't use it much at all. So his team is pretty bred. And Duke, hate Duke. But the team that he's put together is his guys.
Yeah.
He recruited those guys. They're all his. He didn't use the portal as much. So, I don't know. It's credit to them.
I want to ask you one thing about the Duke game again before we step out. And that is, it's not often that we see a freshman at the end of a game take over the way Cameron Boozer. We've seen Darren Peterson do it earlier this year. But just they went to him three straight possessions. And he scored on three. I think it was two twos and a three. Just what was your impressions of Boozer seeing him in person?
He's legit. And I tried to push for a while. I'm like, he's just throwing his body around. He's dominating guys who are smaller than him. And I tried to push back on him for a while. After Saturday night, I looked at my dad immediately. I'm like, all right, if the Wizards get him, I'm not mad. You know? Yeah. And just the passing. I mean, he clears out the one time, checks to Evans, makes sure Evans is there. Drives, spins, and a perfect dime for a three. And I'm like, this dude has it passing. We know he has it rebounding. Is he going to dominate scoring right away? No. And there's people comparing him to Kevin Love. And Ken, you're going to get a little angry at this. I'm not comparing him to Jokic, but the play style is a little bit, the playmaking big is a little bit more comparable to you.
He's a good passer.
He's a great passer. He's going to have rebounds. He'll score when he needs to. And it's not like, well, let him shoot. When they let him shoot, he drills it. I mean, the kid's legit. I got to give him credit. And it was funny. There was a reporter, and he answered questions very well, better than the Michigan guy. I mean, they asked about guarding Boozer, and it was clear Michigan was trying to throw shade at him. Meanwhile, they asked him about guarding Lendeborg and those guys, and he's like, they're great players. So very mature response. But it was funny. One of the reporters during the post-presser says Carlos and is asking Shire a question about Cam. He's calling him Carlos.
Ah.
And Shire stops and he's like, did Carlos do media this week? I must be missing that. Did Carlos do media? And everybody started laughing and then he re-asked the question, but it was pretty funny.
Our first trip inside, around the Beltway. I'm looking forward to the next one. Coming up next, though, we get back to the Orioles and a lot of Yennier Cano smoke. Are we buying it? Is it just one of those things that you need to talk about stuff during spring training? Or could Yennier Cano bounce back? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
The Fan. When you're away from your car, listen on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps. Search 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, it's Ken Wyman. Ever wanted to go to the NBA Finals? Well, now's your chance, courtesy of FanDuel. All you have to do is use your profit boost on an NBA future, and you'll be entered for a shot to win an NBA Finals trip for two. NBA futures let you lock in your pick for who you think will go all the way, whether it's a team to win the championship or a conference title. Just visit FanDuel.com/local to get started. Play your game with FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. FanDuel Sportsbook's the official sportsbook of 105.7 The Fan. 21 plus and present in Maryland. No purchase necessary. Limit one entry. For Profit Boost token, opt-in required. Must apply Profit Boost token on select market. Restrictions apply. See full terms, including methods of entry at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Please play responsibly. For help, visit mdgamblinghelp.org or call 1-800-GAMBLER.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.